Okay. So the Braisa says the following: Tana Rabbanan, Mipnei Shlosha Dvarim, Ein Nichnasim El Churva. So there are three reasons why you're not supposed to enter a Churva. Mipnei Chashad, because of suspicion. Rashi explains Shelo Yomru Zona Muchenes Shlosham. The assumption is when a person enters a Churva, why would somebody enter a Churva? He must be up to something not good. And what would you do in a Churva that wouldn't be good? So he'd have a prostitute waiting for him. Number two, the Braisa says, Mipnei Hamapolas, that if it's a Churva, if it's a ruin, well, the reason it's a ruin is because it's already fallen. It started to fall. So the fear is, it started to fall. Now you're going to go in there and it's going to fall the rest of the way and you're going to get injured or killed. And number three, Mipnei Hamazikim, because of the demons that like to hang out in deserted places. That's the abode of all the scary creatures, is the what we would call the land of the unknown. So that's where Mazikin Shadim tend to hang out in a Churva. So now the Gemara asks a simple question. Like, you know, with a child, you tell a child, don't do X. He says, why? So you give him a reason. So one reason should be enough. Maybe no reason should be enough. But you give him multiple reasons. Why didn't you give him three reasons? So the Gemara says, but Mei Chashad, okay, why do you have to tell us about the concern of Chashad? Forget it. Leave it if there were no concern. Even if there were no concern of that someone would have a zona waiting from there. You can't enter a Churva for the fact that it might fall on you. So why do you need the reason of Chashad? To which the Gemara responds in the top word on Daf Gimel Amud Aleph, Bechadati, which is literally the Aramaic equivalent of Chadash, the top instead of a shin. So if you're dealing with a new Churva, now I'm not sure we would necessarily say this. I think usually when things are still falling, they're kind of in flux. But the assumption is it's a, you know, something fell, but it hasn't had time that everything else is going to fall. So then we're not concerned about Mapolas, but we will be concerned about Chashad. So that's why you have to give us the reason of Chashad. Then the Gemara says, but why do you have to tell us about Chashad? V'teifek le mishum mazikin. Even if there were no Chashad, again, it's a dangerous place to go because of the mazikin. So the Gemara says, betray. Now, the reason why you have to tell us that you're not supposed to enter a Churva because of Chashad is because if there were two men entering, there wouldn't be concern that there was a zona there. Why? Because that's the kind of thing normally that only one man would go and do. So now the Gemara says, I jumped ahead. Two people, you know, can go in because of Mazikin. Because of Mazikin are not going to bother two people together normally. Normally, Mazikin only like to tangle with one person. So if you tell us, that's because of Chashad, I'll know that it's prohibited even if there are two people. So the Gemara says, yeah, but I betray Chashad Nami Leka. If the way to get around to obviate the concern, the danger of Mazikin, is to have two people go in there, and that's why I need to tell us Mnei Chashad, well, then the answer is Mnei Chashad is also no problem if there are two men going there. So the Gemara says, no, betray uprize. It depends what kind of two men. If you take a look at Rashi for a second, Rashi notes on the second Rashi on the page, the end of the first line, Chashad nami leka d'tnan aval ish misyached esem shnei anashim. So as a general rule, when you're dealing with people who are of decent reputation, there is no iser yichud of two men and one woman. It's only one man and one woman. So the Gemara asks, well, if that's the case, then if it's, you have two, no mazikin, no chashad. So the answer is betray upritze, the third line on the page in Rashi, the amrinan hasam. No, when is yichud permitted with two men and one woman? Only if you, firstly, it has to be during the day, and it has to be with ksherim. If the men are prutzim, not sure how to define that, different people will say bisman hazeh, all men are prutzim or not, but for the Gemara had two kinds of men. There were ksherim, there were prutzim. So if there were trei uprite, so then there's still a concern of chashad. There's no concern of mapoles because the churba, the ruin, is new. And there's no concern of Mazikin because there are two people there. Okay. So that's why the Gemara says the Braisa has to tell us, don't enter a Churva because of Chashad. It's interesting to note, as an aside, this whole idea of Chashad. What is the Isser? Presumably one doesn't want to, welcome Lenny, one doesn't want to make oneself suspicious. But the question is, what is the concern? If I'm doing something that's not wrong. Okay, Rabbi Yosei entered the Churva because he wanted to daven. So why So is it usur because of their is there chashad? So Rav Shechter likes to point out that there are actually two kinds of maris ayin. We say sometimes you're not allowed to do something because of appearances. So in each one really has a different source. One kind of maris ayin is I walk into a restaurant, let's say, and it has an inappropriate hashkacha. And I'm going into the restaurant and I'm ordering the Coke. And someone else who's from is going to think, oh, if he's going in there, he's going there to eat. And I see there's a tudah. If you go to McDonald's, I think any Jew knows that McDonald's, any Jew for whom it would make a difference knows that McDonald's isn't kosher. But if you're talking about something that's questionable, so if someone walks in and sees, they say, oh, from Jew walked in there, it must be kosher. And they don't realize that you only walked in there to get a Coke or to go to the bathroom. So that's one kind of a problem, Marisayin, where you're making, it's not that people are going to look askance upon you, but rather you're making something, you're going to basically entrap people. You're violating the Iver Losite Meshel because people are going to think that what you're doing, because you're from, they're going to think that it's okay. And they don't realize you're doing something else. So that's one kind of Marisayin. But there's a different kind of Marisayin, which is based upon a pasuk in Parshas Matos, where Moshe speaking to the 2.5 tribes and says, if you keep your end of the deal, v'hisem nikiyim me'ashem u'mi'Yisrael, you will be clean from God and the Jewish people. And the Mishnah in Shkalim says the following. It says that if I'm, it's hard for you to see, but if I am the Kohen who's going into the Lishka after they piled up all the Machzis HaShekels, and I have pockets. So you're not allowed to, the Kohen who walks in with a garment is not allowed to walk in with pockets. Why, says the Mishnah? Because there are two possibilities. Possibility one is that the person subsequent to taking the Trumas HaLishka, again, he took in a big bag, which they lifted Shkalim out and they used for the Karbanos. The people are going to say, if subsequently that Kohen becomes wealthy, then they're going to say, you know, he got wealthy because he was busy sticking his hand in the till. And if he becomes poor, the Mishnah says, people are going to say, he stuck his hand in the till and God punished him by making him poor, which goes to show you, by the way, that you cannot win no matter what you do. Because no matter what happens to this guy, people are going to suspect him. But because of that, the Mishnah says, you can't walk in with something with pockets and so on. So there's no way you could walk out having stuffed your pockets or any other place with money. And why? The Mishnah says, v'yisem nikiyim me'ashem u'mi'Yisrael, which means that you're not allowed, it's not only you're not allowed to do something that's also, you're also not allowed to do something that gives the impression you're doing something also, which will give you people a negative image or a negative, it will damage your reputation. So there's an idea that a person's, not only should a person's behavior be above board, but the appearances of the behavior should be above board as well. I think anybody who's worked in the business world and the corporate world understands that it's not just malfeasance that it's a problem, but even the appearance of malfeasance is a problem. Okay, so anyway, so that's reason number one. Again, I want to just encourage people, if you have questions or comments, just because there's a virtual distance between us, please do jump in with comments. I know Marshall is not here this morning, even though he's responsible for this happening. And I know that he certainly would have comments and feel free to share them, but I really want to encourage everybody else as well. Okay.
What's the basis of mazikin would not hurt two people? Because at the funerals, where there's many traditions, and you know, mazikin play an important part about, you know, women not going. On the contrary, when there are many people, that's when the mazikin are most active.
So I'm going to say this. It depends which kind of mazikin. Wait one moment, because I want, if we finish the Gemara, the top Tosos, it will sort of address your question. I think the assumption is that when two people show up, the mazikin usually split. They scatter because they don't want that. There are situations where mazikin don't, as we'll see, will become readily apparent in the Gemara, and that may be more relevant to the kinds of traditions that you're talking about. Right now, there certainly are a lot of traditions associated with funerals, with mesim, and so on, where there's a concern about the shadim hovering over and people doing things of that nature. I think probably the minhag of washing one's hands when you leave the Beis HaKfaros is probably based upon that idea. Because it's certainly not about Tumah V'Tahara. If you became tummy to the mace in the cemetery or in the funeral home, washing your hands doesn't accomplish anything. So I think that there's a comment of Tosus that at least partially addresses your question. So the Gemara has now dealt with the first angle. The first angle was chashad. You need chashad because there are situations where the concern of the building falling and the concern of mazikin isn't applicable. And in those situations, sometimes chashad is applicable. Now the Gemara goes to the next thing on the second line on Gimel Amud Beis. Mipnei ha-mapolis. So why does the Braisa have to tell us that it's usher to enter a churva because it might collapse on you? Teifiklei, v'teifiklei mishum chashad u'mazikin. There are other two reasons. You don't need to tell us about mapolis. There's a concern of chashad and there's a concern of mazikin. So the Gemara says, no, you know why you have the concern of mapolis? Because betray v'kashrei. If you have two people there and they're ksherim. So if there are two people there, you don't have to worry about mazikin normally. And if they're ksherim, you don't have to worry about chashad. It's not a concern of yichud. And therefore, the only reason not to end, the only reason for two anashim ksherim not to enter a churva is because it might fall down on them, which would mean, of course, two anashim who are ksherim in a new churva, it's okay to enter that churva. Okay, and now the Gemara says, finally, the fourth line in the Gemara, mipnei hamazikin, you can't enter the churva because of mazikin. V'teifik le mipnei chashad u'mapoles. So the Gemara says, b'churva chadati, uvitrei v'kashrei. If you're talking about a new churva and two people are ksherim, so then it's only a concern of mazikin. So you're immediately all going to jump up and say, one second, we just said two people mazikin is not a problem. So why does the Gemara asks the question? And the Gemara says, wait, I betray mazikin nami lekka. There's no concern of mazikin. So the Gemara says, bimkomam chayshinan. So Rashi just explains on the fourth line, the last wide line of Rashi, b'makom shehem mitsuyan tadir chayshinan afilu betray. So Isaac, that starts to go to answer your question a little bit. If there are two people there, but it's a place where mazikin regularly hang out, so then like a chorba, then that's a problem. But then you realize, going backwards in the Gemara, we have a problem again. Because earlier, the Gemara's solution to explaining why it was that you needed the reason of chashad and you didn't have to worry about mazikin in a chorva was because of trei. But now you're saying that in a chorva where mazikin are mitsuyim, trei, even two people, are not safe for mazikin. So once again, why do you need the reason of chashad? So Tap Tosus was bothered by that question. Tosus in Ben Koma Chayshinan says, Peirush sheryadua sheregilim sham hamazikin. You know when it's usher to enter a chorva because of mazikin, even though you're multiples? When you know that that chorva, there are regularly are mazikin there. However, but when earlier the Gemara tried to explain what's the reason of chashad needed. When you had two people, so there's no concern of mazikin, bila'el betrayu pritzei lekem isha mazikin, aimi bistam shena regim. So Tosos is positing the following. Some chorvas are known to be hangouts for mazikin, and some chorvas, we don't know anything about it. So a regular chorva, we're not concerned if two people walk into. But if you know it's a place where mazikin, it's a mazik hangout, so then already that's a concern even with two people. So in that case, if you have two people, so there's no concern of chashad if they're ksherim, and it's a new chorva, so there's no concern of it's going to fall. Nonetheless, you have to be concerned of mazikin. So to come back to your question, Isaac, in a situation where mazikin are in fact mitsuyim, where you expect them to be there, so under those circumstances, you can't assume that that you're safe even though you're two. So I assume when it comes to certain minhagim of the Beis HaKvaros, so that's a real hangout for mazikin. And it doesn't matter how many people are there, it's a danger to the people who are there. Okay.
Can I jump in here a minute? So, I mean, we're just assuming mazikin is, you know, you meet up with them every day on the street corner, or that you hang out with them or whatever. But we're not really talking about, I mean, you know, we're talking about something that is ethereal that we can't see, presumably. And so what's the whole premise here of the mazikin to begin with? How would you know if this is where they hang out, this is where they don't hang out?
So let me step back and sort of, I guess, I will have to address the question of mazikin. In light of current events, I might note, actually, that Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, in a Torah Mada lecture given in Lamport Auditorium, many, many years ago, I was a high school student. I slept over on my brother's floor to go Thursday night to hear Rav Aaron talk, and it was 1987. And Rav Aaron was trying to deal with some of the contradictions of science and the Gemara and so on. And he proposed at the time that maybe what Shedemar, and we assume Azikin and Shedemar are the same thing, that Shedemar are germs. So in light of current events, so certainly you could I'm not sure that today, I think for coronavirus, being in a churva is probably a better place to be. But nonetheless, so it's interesting to note that. Now, I'm not satisfied with that explanation from Mazikin. It's very clear that Mazikin and Shadim play a much bigger role in Bavel and Eretz Yisrael because they play a central role in Persian culture and Zoroastrianism. And therefore, the Gemara has it all over the place as well. Some of the time, so there are fascinating stories in the Gemara. So you ask the question, well, you can't see them. So the Gemara later, I think it's on Dav Vav, the Gemara will tell us, if you want to see them, how you do them. The techniques, the methods, I think you have to take the firstborn black cat, the child of a firstborn black cat, burn it, sprinkle the ashes around the bed, and you'll find the chicken feet. The traditions are chicken feet. But you do have, in all seriousness, at least as the starting point, you have to recognize that this was, I won't call it contemporary science, because I don't think science and folklore were necessarily so different. They didn't have the same kind of clear distinctions that we do. So certainly there's a large piece of this was something that they believed. Now, when you talk about certain situations, it's not hard to understand. You ask the question, well, how do you know whether the mazik in there or not? Well, the answer is, what happens in churvas? What happens in churvas is bad things happen. Bad things happen because, simply, it's a good place for a criminal to hide out, right? Because people don't like to commit crimes, in the middle of Times Square. They'd rather do it in a place that's secluded so nobody knows who committed the crime. So it's not hard to understand why a building that's already collapsed, where it's secluded, why people viewed it as a dangerous place, and why perhaps even sometimes objectively it was a dangerous place. So that's not going to explain every single Gemara. I mean, I would say the following. Every time the Gemara describes something that's dangerous, that we would say there's no danger in it, it's because somebody did something and there's a cause associated with it, right? I'm sure every one of us has probably a food that we once had and we got sick afterwards and we never want to eat the food again. Now, a rational mind says, there's no connection. I had food X, and I already had a stomach virus, and that's why I threw up afterwards, not because I ate food X. But nonetheless, that's the way our minds work. We try to find causes even when there are no causes. So I think that some of the Shadim and Gemaras are going to fall into the same category. In other words, it's going to fall into the category of people make connections between things, and churvas are probably not crazy things to draw connections between people who hang out in churvas and bad things happen. So that would be my guess. But there's no question that to some extent in the Gemara, many of them work with an assumption that demons were real. They weren't all bad, by the way. There's a Gemara in Chulin that talks about when you draw water from the river, so you're supposed to spill off the top of the water because apparently that's what the Shadim drank from. So then the Gemara tells a story of one of the Amoraim. The Gemara, I think, is on Daf Kuf Vavam Beis at the bottom. In Chulin, the seventh parak. The Gemara tells of one of the Amoraim who had a Shaid who worked for him. And then the Shaid asked him to go get water. So the Shaid took water, but it took a little while. And then when he came back, and then he saw that, I don't know, it was Rapapa, whoever it was, the people of the household, knocked the top of the water off the barrels. And when he asked him what took so long, he said, I was waiting to skim the stuff off the top of the barrel. But had I known that you guys already know this trick, then I wouldn't have had to wait. Right? So they're not all bad, the Shadim, in their minds. So there's a lot of interesting stuff. You do start with the assumption Mazikin and Shadim are demons. And some of the things that are described, I think, are not actually going to hold together in our reality. But some of the things, I think the Churva is not totally crazy, will actually sometimes, again, it's not because they're demons there, but because bad things happen in secluded places. People are not safe. Shalom Aleichem to the Mara Dasra. Okay, so anyway, so that's the that's how the Gemara concludes then. So that's why we need three reasons. We need the concern of Chashad, because sometimes the other two don't apply. We have the concern of Mapoles, because sometimes the other two don't apply. And sometimes we have the concern of Mazikin, because the other two do not apply. Okay, fine. So this Gemara was only here because of the story of Rabbi Yose who entered the Churva. So now we get back to our topic. And now the Gemara is going to talk about the Mishmaros of the night. So the Mishnah had said that Rabbi Eliezer says that the end time for Kriya Shema at night was at Sofa Shmura Rishona, which means the Gemara said on the previous Amud, it means 4 hours into the night. And Rabbi Eliezer's position, as we mentioned, as the Gemara will make clear later, Rabbi Eliezer believes that the shachbacha, zman shchiva, means when people go to sleep, not when people are sleeping, but actually the time they go to sleep. Most people go to sleep in the first third of the night. So now the Gemara, which on the previous Amud had asked, they wanted to know what did Rabbi Eliezer hold? How many mishmaros? So they said he held three. But now the Gemara quotes a braisa, which actually has a dispute. Tana Rabbanon. Arba mishmaros have halayla. The first Tana, Rebbe says, there are four mishmaros in the night, which means that each mishmar is 3 hours. Divrei Rebbe. Rabbi Nassan Omer Shalosh. Rabbi Nassan says no. There are three mishmaros at night, which means each mishmar is actually 4 hours. So now the Gemara says, my time at the Rabbi Nassan. Where does Rabbi Nassan come up with this idea? Dichsiv. Now, interestingly enough, the Gemara asks about Rabbi Nassan first. A preoccupation that the Rishonim sometimes have is why does the Gemara, the Gemara present opinion A and B, and now which way does it present the explanation? Does it follow the same order? Or does it do what we would call, a chiasmus, a reverse the structure, ABBA? In this particular case, the reason the Gemara probably explains the second opinion first is because it's the one that's...
You are in the meeting now. There are 17 participants in the meeting. This meeting is being recorded. You are muted. This meeting is being recorded.
Okay. This is like the announcements when they have parents at the conferences at Ramaz when we're going to show. Okay.
If anyone has their phone on speaker, they should take it off.
Yes. Okay. So the second opinion, Rabbi Nassan's, is easier to work. So the Gemara says, my time at the Rabbi Nassan. So the pasuk in the story with Gidon, when he attacks the camp of Midian, is that he approaches during the beginning of the middle mishmar. So obviously, ain't Tana, ain't Tichona. We have a little brisa that tells us this, but I think we could have figured this out on our own. Tana, ain't Tichona, el shei shofanecha ulacharel. Middle. You can only talk about the middle if you have something before, something after that are even. If the Laila is four mishmaros, which is the middle mishmar? The second, the third? So that's what Rabbi Nassan says. And now the Rebbe who said that the Laila is four mishmaros, so what is he going to do with the pasuk? My tichona? The answer is, achas mena tichona shebetichonos. In other words, you have middles. You have two mishmaros that are in the middle, and it's one of the two. Now, the truth is that's not a very compelling answer. Rabbi Nassan says, Miksiv tichona shebet tichonos, tichonoksiv. It says the middle one. I should note here, by the way, that the Gemara could have given a different answer, probably, but maybe it didn't want to. The idea that the Laila has a certain number of mishmaros doesn't have to be fixed over time. It's possible that in the days of the Shoftim, or in one particular context, there were four mishmaros at night, but by the time of the Mishnah, maybe under the Roman system, there were only three mishmaros, or vice versa. In other words, it's not proving from a pasuk how many mishmaros doesn't necessarily have to prove what Rabbi Eliezer meant in the Mishnah, how things should be regarded. But the Gemara is going to hear, it's going to try to stick to pesukim. Okay, now the Gemara says, my time at the Rebbe. Given that Rebbe's reading is so forced in the pasuk and Pirate and Sefer Shoftim, why does Rebbe assume that the night is four mishmaros? So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Zreika, Amar Rabbi Ami, Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Kosuv Echad Omer, one pasuk by David HaMelech says, Chatzos Laila Akum Lehodos Lecha Al Mishpatei Tzidkecha. That both of these psukim, the Gemara is going to quote, both of these psukim are from the perek that's known as Tamanya Ape. There's a chapter in Tehillim, chapter 119, Kuf Yotes, which has the Aleph Beis eight times. The first eight psukim all start with Aleph, the next eight with Beis, and so on. So the Mizmor might be described as an ode to Talmud Torah. That's really what the Mizmor Kuf Yotes is about. So here, David HaMelech says, on the one hand, Chatzos Laila Akum Lo Dos Lach, Al Mishpatei Tzidkecha. I arise in the middle of the night, at Chatzos, midnight, in order to praise you over your statutes of justice. because of Echad Omer, another pasuk says in that mizmar, kadmu einai ashmuros, that my eyes woke up early before the day, ashmuros, two watches. So, you know, this is like a simultaneous equations in basic algebra. On the one hand, Rebbe gets up at chatzos. On the other hand, he gets up two ashmuros before the day begins, two watches. Obviously, it must be that there are two mishmaros after chatzos. Hence, there are four watches throughout the night. So that's what he says. Ha-ketzat, arba mishmaros ha-ve-ha-layla. Okay, so if David, if we know that chatzos is two mishmaros before daybreak, it must be that there are four mishmaros a night. The Rabbi Nassan, what's Rabbi Nassan going to do with this psukim? Savar laka Rabbi Yoshua. He holds like Rabbi Yoshua. Ditznan. Rabbi Yoshua Omer ad shalosh shaos shekein derech malachim lamod b'shalosh shaos. When David was claiming credit for getting up early, it wasn't early before dawn. It was early before all other kings get up. Right? Why is it that Sosman Kriya Shema is 3 hours? The answer is because that's b'shal shederech malachim omdim. The kings get up then. That's still called Zman Kima. So David says, I got up two mishmaros before kings normally get up. So how many is that? That's 8 hours, right? 6 hours, the Gemara says, Shish Shaos, Shish Delayla, Vitarati Diyamama, Havalu Shtei Mishmaros. David HaMelech gets up 8 hours before the other Malachim get up. Now, there is a problem with this presentation in the Gemara. I haven't seen any of the Rishonim comment on it, but years ago I looked, I know one of the Achronim just notes it. I don't think there's an answer to the question, but I'll ask you, when is Sof Zman Kriya Shema, right? You'll see, the shul sometimes will send out, I imagine the shul prints in the bulletin, certain times of the year they'll tell you, or they'll get up and announce in shul, you know, right at the beginning, that Sof Zman Kriya Shema is time X, and if you haven't said it yet, say it now before we start Pesukei Dezimra. So when is Sof Zman Kriya Shema? Anybody know? Isaac, you have to unmute yourself. Nobody should be shy. I know we're remote again. How many hours into the day is Sof Zman Kriya Shema? 3 hours. In other words, if you were to figure out today the sun rose at 7:07, I don't know when solar noon is, halfway in between is 3 hours. But that's not what this Gemara says. What does this Gemara say? It says it's after two. It says the beginning of the third hour, not the end of the third hour. Now we don't paskin that way. When you get the time in the shul bulletin announced in shul, that Sof Zman Kriya Shema probably, given that we discussed the Vilna Gaon and the Magen Avraham and the two shitas over the last month, so it's following the shita of the Gra. 3 hours. Take the day from sunrise to sunset. Divide by 12 to get a Shah Zmanit. Take three of those after sunrise, and that is the time. So this Gemara actually sounds like it's the beginning of the third hour, which is 2 hours after sunrise. We don't paskin like this. We assume it's after 3 hours. Okay. So anyway, so that was Rabbi Nassan's answer. And then Rav Ashi says, I have a simpler answer. Rav Ashi amar mishmara upal ganami mishmaras karlahu. Right? He says that 1.5, how many hours did David get up, assuming that it was before daybreak? 6 hours. 6 hours is 1.5. If you hold that a mishmar is 4 hours long, 3 in a night. It's 1.5 mishmaros. So we say one piece of bread, and we don't say 1.5 piece of bread. We say 1.5 pieces of bread. So Rav Ashi says that mishmara upalga nami mishmaros karalahu. That's all. He calls it mishmaros. So David can say, you know, part of a mishmar is considered a mishmar, and therefore if David gets up at chatzos, 6 hours is enough to be called two mishmaros, even though really it's only 1.5 a mishmar.
Rabbi Weider, I believe that there is a netziv that says that 1.5 loaves of bread on Shabbat can be used as lecha mishnah based on this Gemara.
Interesting. I would have given a different reason based upon later in Brachos that if you don't have a whole loaf of bread, you use part of a loaf of bread. But that's interesting. He uses that.
He uses this as a way of sort of showing that 1.5 can still be multiples.
Very good. I like that. That's very good. Okay.
Quick question.
Yes.
I was between the Gra and I think the Magen Avraham, isn't there a difference in the 12 and the second?
There is, because the Magen Avraham is 72 minutes earlier.
Yeah, but one of them is between sunrise and sunset, and one of them is between daybreak and nightfall.
Correct. So the Magen Avraham starts 72 minutes earlier, ends 72 minutes later. Now, if you figure you're dividing by 12, that's an extra 12 minutes per hour.
Okay.
In other words, just 72 and 72 divided by 12 is 12. It's 144. Yeah. Now, that means 3 hours is 36 minutes longer for the Magen Avraham, but you're starting 72 minutes earlier. Which is why the Zman Kriya Shema of the Magen Avraham is always 36 minutes before the Zman Kriya Shema of the Gra.
Of the Gra.
Right. You get 36 extra minutes in the hours, but you lose 72 because you're starting earlier. Yeah. That's the way it will work out. So I think most, you know, fancy, when you see a fancy luach, it will tell you, oh, Zman Kriya Shema of the Magen Avraham, so Zman Kriya Shema of the Gra. But most of the time, I think we assume like the Gra, and most of the time, if they give you just one time, but if not, you can, you know, if they only give you one, you can just add or subtract 36, depending on which one you're looking at. Okay, fine. Now, the next little passage in the Gemara is going to interrupt with a totally unrelated issue, completely, totally unrelated. Why does it interrupt? So if you look at the previous statement, it was Amar Rav Zveika, Amar Rav Ami, Amar Rav Yishua ben Levi, Kasuv Echad Omer. That was the last statement of the, in the previous section. It was about the 5-6 lines before they get wide. Because of that unusual chain of citation, Rabbi Zveika, Amar Rav Ami, Rav Yishua ben Levi, the Gemara now is going to quote, and I didn't check this, but I wouldn't be surprised if you take the Bar Ilan, you know, one of the computer programs, and you search all of Shas. It wouldn't surprise me at all if this is the only place, these are the only two statements that this Amora has of A quoting B quoting C. And that's why they quote this here. But it's totally unrelated to Brachos, totally related to anything that we're doing. And one of the ways that you also know that is that if you look in, and they actually messed up here. I don't know if we've ever spoken about this before, but if you're looking in your Gemara, if you look at the top right, I know we don't have the exact edition, but I assume most of you see the Ein Mishpat Ner Mitzvah on the top right. So I probably said this once before, but I'll review it and point that in this context. The Ein Mishpat Ner Mitzvah is a work that connects you from the Gemara to where in the Svarim of Halacha, where the particular Gemara is quoted. So if you, and usually it gives you three sources. It gives you the Rambam, it gives you the Smag, the Sefer Mitzvahs Gedolos, Rav Moshe of Kusi, 13th century Ashkenaz, and then it will give you the Turin Shulchan Aruch. So if you look here, it says Maimoni Perek Yud Gimel Mehilchos Avelus Halacha Tes, the Smag Mitzvah Saseh the Rabbanon Beis number 2 and Tur B'Shulchan Aruch Yeredeya Simen Shin Dalad Mem Sif Tezayin. Now what he forgot to put in here is the following: where does the Rif quote this din? Now normally where would the Rif quote a din? We've looked at some riffs. So where do you think a riff would quote a din? If you wanted to find the riff on a particular Gemara, where would you look? It's a little bit of a trick question.
What do you mean the rush and the riff and the back, right?
Exactly. In other words, the rush and the riff are on the Gemara. So if you want to know how the riff is going to pass in this Gemara, you think to look to the back. The problem is it's not there. Normally, the Ein Mishpat, when he's doing his job, will tell you if the riff doesn't quote it at all, but then he says nothing. But very often, a Gemara is relevant in another Masechta. And then the Ein Mishpat Ner Mitzvah will tell you and look in Rav Alfasi in that other Masechta. In this case, it's a law related to Avelos. The laws of Avelos are mostly found in the third Perek of Moed Katan. Here, you wouldn't know where the Rif is, except for Tosus is kind enough, the second Tosus, to tell you, Upasak Rav Alfas. He tells you the Rif passed in a certain way. He doesn't tell you where, but you probably have a note in your Tosos that tells you where it is. It's in the last Perek of Moed Katan. Okay, but anyway, so this Gemara is totally out of place. This Gemara belongs only in Maseches Moed Katan. According to the Mesoras HaShas, the only place it's actually found elsewhere is in Maseches Smachos, which are these Mishnayos that are late, they're post-Talmudic, that's printed usually at the end of Seder and Ezekiel in the Vilna Shas. But this Gemara is not quoted there, apparently. Okay, but let's learn this Gemara anyway. The Amar Rabbi Zreika, Amar Rabbi Ami, Amar Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi, Ein Omrim Bifnei HaMeis Ela Dvarav Shalmeis. When you're in the presence of a mace, of a body of someone who has died, So you're not allowed to speak except for things that are related to the mace, which either means if you're discussing arrangements that you have to, or if you're speaking about praise of the dead and so on, things that are related to the mace. So that's all you're allowed to do. Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana, lo amaran, this prohibition only applies elabit devrei Torah. Avamile da amar leslan ba. If you're talking about current events, well, that's apparently okay. You're only not allowed to be talking about divrei Torah unless it's relevant to the mace. So there's another opinion in the Gemara. The second opinion is v'ika da amrei amar Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana lo amaran ela afilu bidivrei Torah. No, not only are you not allowed, of course you're not allowed to talk Dvarim B'Talim, things that are not related to Torah, not related to the mace, but even Divrei Torah you're not allowed to speak. Now, these two approaches, the question is, the bottom line is, you're not allowed to speak Divrei Torah in the presence of a mace. Are you allowed to talk about other things? So what the question really hinges upon, why is it prohibited? Why is it prohibited? So, Rashi writes here on the first opinion. Rashi says, "Lo amaran el dvar halacha" is Rashi's gear, so not the Brei Torah. He says, "Asar l'saper l'fana." The Rashi is about 10-11 lines when they get narrow. "Asar l'saper l'fana shakol chayavin l'saper bahem," because everybody's obligated to be speaking the Brei Torah. "V'hameis domeim," the mace can't talk. And therefore, v'hava le'loeg l'arash chayrefo sehu. Right, you're not allowed to do mitzvos in the presence of, in the presence of a mace. The Gemara in the beginning of the third parak of Brachos says that when you're in the presence of a mace, you're not allowed to wear tefillin. You're not allowed to be holding a sefer Torah. Your tzitzis shouldn't be out or shouldn't be dragging or something like that because it's considered mocking the poor. In this case, the poor is the dead person who can't do mitzvos anymore, even though everybody ideally is supposed to do mitzvos. So that's why Rashi says, "Avamil da'alma she'en genai l'machush b'hem leslan ba." The fact that the mace doesn't talk about, the New York Yankees or the coronavirus, so that doesn't matter because there's no mitzvah to be talking about those things. So the fact that the mace is domain, that he's silent or she's silent when you're busy doing this, when you're busy talking, doesn't matter. It's not a busha to anyone when they keep quiet, when there's no reason to open their mouths, but it is a busha when they should be opening their mouths. So that's how the first opinion understands it. Rashi doesn't explain the second opinion, but I think the second opinion is obvious, that it's not about loeg l'arash. It's about recognizing the gravity of the situation. You're in the presence of a niftar, and the idea that you should be talking about anything other than things that are relevant to the niftar is simply inappropriate. Tosos, as I mentioned, as I started to read before, writes, the second Tosos on the page, Upasak Rav Alphas Mishum Rav Haigon, Dafka Divrei Torah al Dvaram da Amal Les Lanva, and Vidafka Ba'al Shalom. It has to be within four Amas of the mace. This is the Psak of the Rif. There are some Rishonim, a minority opinion that may Paskin L'Homra stringently to say it's even Dvaram Alma. The Shulchan Aruch Paskins without recording a dissenting opinion, like the Rif, that the prohibition only applies to Dvarav Shel Mace. To Divrei Torah, it doesn't apply to Dvaram Alma. If you ask me, even though technically it's permitted, there still could be an issue of Kavod HaMeis in many, many contexts. I think most of us probably have that kind of sense that there's just things that you do and things that you don't do, a kind of a COVID Rosh in the presence of a mace, one would hope. Okay, anyway, so that's really just that's a tangent because the names, Rav Zerika, Rav Ami, Rav Shuben Levi, and now the Gemara goes back to talk about the David's getting up at midnight. And so now the Gemara asks the following question.
A quick question?
Yes.
Yeah, if a mace is not mechuyev b'mitzvah, why is the loeg l'arash? He has no chiyev. He's dead.
So again, but that's not a question just on this Gemara. I think the idea is even if you're not obligated to do so, this is something that people want to do, right? Lots of people volunteer for mitzvahs that they're not mechuyev in situations where they're not mechuyev if they can. So the idea that the mace would presumably want to do these things, but he can't do these things. I think that's the assumption they're making. Okay. So now the Gemara continues on the sixth wide line. V'David v'palga d'layla havakoi. David, it sounds like David slept until midnight and then he got up. So the Gemara says, is that true? Doesn't it say, me'urta havakoi, he used to get up. I mean, he didn't sleep even from earlier in the night. Dichsim, kidamti vaneshef va'ashaveya. So it means literally, and I believe that's also, if I'm not mistaken, from the very same Misma, from Kuf Yotes, he was early in the Neshef, and he would pray to God, va'ashaveya. So what is Neshef? The Gemara assumes Neshef is night. Umimai dahai Neshef urtahu. How do you know that? Dichsiv, b'neshef be'erev yom be'ishon layla va'afela. That's a pasuk, I believe, from Mishlei. But it describes this time of Neshef. Neshef is, in fact, the beginning of night. Now, the truth is, the Gemara is about to present an alternative version, but probably the pshat is Neshef comes from the root of the word either Nashaf or Nashab is more common with a beis. One of the ways I occasionally torture students in teaching Hebrew is with the following question. I ask them, what does it mean, Mashiv HaRuach Umarid HaGeshem? And I will not ask anybody to translate there, because the translation you often get, and some of you I'm sure are thinking this, is Mashiv HaRuach means God brings the wind back and he brings the rain down. That's what many people think Mashiv HaRuach Umarid HaGeshem is. And that's not what the word Mashiv. What?
He blows the wind?
Causes to blow. Yeah. So we give, when we want to test people's biblical Hebrew, you ask them the following question. What's the difference between Mashiv, Moshiv, and Meshiv? And the answer is those are all Binyan Hifil, the causatives, but three different roots. So Meshiv means to return or to cause to go back, like to be Meshiv Aveda. Moshiv, that's Shin Vav Beis. Moshiv is to seat someone, to cause someone to sit. That's Yud Shin Beis. And Mashiv, the Dagesh Chazak in the Shin, is a contraction of Man Shiv. Like Mapil is Man Peel. It's Nun Shin Beis. And the root Nun Shin Beis means to blow. So Mashiv HaRuach, as you said correctly, Mashiv HaRuach means causes the wind to blow and then causes the rain to go down. So the word Nashav and Nashaf, they're equivalent, often mean to blow. So the truth is the early night is a time when my sense is, I don't know if this is actually absolutely true, but at least my sense is that, and others say the same thing, is that it's the time where the wind blows. So that's how some Rishonim explain why the beginning of night is called Neshef. So now, for the moment, the Gemara accepts the fact that we have a contradiction. Does David get up by Chatzos, or is David already up from earlier in the Neshef? So the Gemara says the following, it gives two answers. One possibility is, Amar Roshaya, Amar B'yacha, Hachi Kamar, Me'olam lo aver alai Chatzos Laila B'shena. In other words, David says that I generally got up early at night in order to pray to God, but midnight was the absolute latest time. Never went past midnight. Always that his alarm clock went off at midnight. So if he didn't get up earlier, he was up by midnight. That's one approach. And then Rabbi Zeira. What's that? Marshall? Somebody said something. Nope. Okay. Rabbi Zeira Amar, no. Al Chatzos Laila Haya Misnamnim Kisus. Until midnight, he would kind of doze on and off, and then Mikamba Eila Chayim Iskaber Kari. Then he was up bright and awake. So Kidam Dimanesh Hashem, it means he was up a little bit some of the time before Chatzos, and the Chatzos he was really up strong. And that was even without coffee. Okay, so now a last approach is Ravashi, maybe the most pious approach. Ravashi Amarna Ad Chatzos Laila Haya Osek B'Divrei Torah Mikamba Eila B'Shiros B'Sishbachos. So until Chatzos, he'd be studying Torah, which is kind of interesting because the Pasuk says Ashaveya, which really refers to prayer. After Chatzos, that fits. Chatzos Laila Akum Lahodos Lacha, to give praise to you. Then he was saying or composing Mizmorei Tehillim. Don't want to be anachronistic there. Okay. So now the Gemara wants to know, one second. V'neshef urtahu, ha'neshef tzafrahu. Neshef is not in the beginning of the night, it's the morning. Dichsiv. Vayakem David mehaneshef v'ad ha'erev l'macharasam. So it's when you went to battle, certainly in those days when you didn't have light at night, for the most part, you fought from morning to night. So it's, and that's what mineshef ad ha'erev sounds like. So you see that neshef is the morning. In which case, kidamti baneshef would just mean I got up very early in the morning. So the Gemara says no. My lav mitzafra v'ad laila ad leilya, from morning to night. The Gemara says lo. Now, me'orta v'ad orta. It says, it means David actually fought against his enemies and smote them from one night for 24 hours, from night till night. So the Gemara says, nada. That doesn't make any sense, because if that's what the pasuk means, ihachi lichtof mehaneshef yaraneshef o meha'erev ad ha'erev. So you should have used the same word. If it's a 24-hour period, you would say from 8 today till 8 tomorrow. You're not going to say use two different names. So now Rabba comes along and says no. Rabba says, Ela amar Rabba tre nishbehavu. There are two neshefs. Nashaf laila va'asi imama, nashaf imama va'asi lelya. Now, what is the word, what does the word nashaf mean? So Rashi says it means to jump or to skip. So he says that basically morning skips and day is here, and then evening skips and night is here, something like that. Other Rishonim say what I alluded to before, and again, somebody might correct me or challenge me on this, or Marshall will go check, well, he'll check Google on this, but I would imagine that both beginning of morning and nightfall are windier times. We certainly have the association with night simply because the sun, what creates wind is the sun's uneven heating of the air in many cases. And the coming of the sun, the setting of the sun, I can imagine has an impact upon it. So some Rishonim say that Nesha refers to, as I said earlier, to blowing, and those are considered windier times. And I don't usually associate sunrise with wind, but sunset I somehow do. I don't know. Okay. So now the Gemara has reached the following point. The Gemara says that David got up at midnight, and he never slept past midnight. Whatever he was doing before midnight, whether he was dozing, whether he might have been sleeping, but sometimes getting up earlier, whether he was busy learning Torah, whatever it was, that's what David did until midnight. But then he was up by midnight. And the question is, the Gemara says, "Vidavid mihava yada palga velelya emas?" How did David know? And they're making an assumption here that David knew exactly when it was midnight. And they say, how is it possible that David knew exactly when it was midnight? Hashta Moshe Rabbeinu lo hava yada. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know exactly when midnight was. Why? He says to Paro and his people, Kachatzos halayla ani yotzei b'soch Mitzrayim. He said to them, Kachatzos halayla. Now, this is not pshat, the way the Gemara is reading. I'll tell you what pshat is afterwards. But the way they're reading right now is Kachatzos means around midnight. Like we say Kachatzi Sha'a, it means approximately a half an hour. So approximately midnight. So the Gemara says, Ilema my kachatzos. What does that mean? Ilema da amar lekut shabrichu kachatzos. That God said to Moshe around midnight, I'm going to go out and kill the firstborn. Miika sveika kamishmaya. What God doesn't know when midnight is. Ela da amar le bachatzos. God said to Moshe bachatzos. But the Gemara doesn't quote the pasuk. But when does Makas Bechoros actually take place? Vayhi. Bachatzi halayla, right? Exactly at midnight. So Moshe says, God said to Moshe, bachatzos. And Moshe wasn't sure. He said kachatzos. And the Gemara later will explain why he didn't repeat it the way God said it. So the Gemara says, Alma misapkale. That means that Moshe wasn't sure. And Moshe Rabbeinu, Rabban Shel Yisrael, didn't know exactly when midnight was. But David havayada, how did David know? So the Gemara says, no, David didn't know, but David simana havale. He had a sign. He had a reliable sign in nature. The Amar of Achabar Bisna, Amar Rabbi Shimon Chasida. Kinar hayataloi lamala lamitaso shmimitaso shel David. There was a, I don't know what a kinar is. We usually translate it as a harp, but I don't know how wind would make noise going through a harp. I could be wrong, but I just don't imagine that the wind blowing would be enough to vibrate the harp strings in a way that would cause it to make sound. I would think this is some kind of, the easiest thing would have been chimes, but it's clearly a musical instrument. It's not just, you know, chimes that you hang up that make noise when the wind blows. So I assume it was more likely to be some type of a wind instrument. I'm not sure, but it was some type of a musical instrument that when the Ruach Tzfonis would come, it was oriented towards the north. When the wind would come from the north, the Kevan Shigia Chatzas Laila Ba Ruach Tzfonis Venoshevespo Umenagin Me'ela. It would create music on its own. Rashi quotes the Gemara Baba Basra. Again, there's a kind of exactitude here that doesn't work in real life, that the wind blows in four different directions throughout the day. It goes in 6-hour shifts of which direction the wind comes from. So Rashi says that the Ruach Tzfonis is Venoshevespo Balaila. Okay. So anyway, so that's, it's not that David himself knew, but he had a siman in nature that told him when it actually was chatzos. And then once the I'll call it the kinor started to play, haya omed v'osek b'torah ad she'ala amar hashachar, until he would study Torah until daybreak. Then kevan she'ala amar hashachar, that was his time he could learn undisturbed. Then he's got to take care of his job. So kevan she'ala amar hashachar, when daybreak came, nichnas du chachmei Yisrael etzlo, the elders of the Jewish people came to him and they said, Amrlo, Adonenu, Hamelech, our master, the king, Amcha Yisrael, Tzrichim Parnasa, they need to earn a Parnasa. Amar Lahem, Lechuvis Parnasus, Emizeh, so go do business with one another. So Amrlo, Eina Kometz Maspia es Hariv, Eina Bor Mismale Mechul Yasa. I don't know exactly what this is, some type of economic philosophy. The Rishonim struggle with this. Literally, the first half just means that a handful is not enough to sate a lion, which means that the needs were very great, especially of the poor. And then there was an idea that a bor is not mismali mechol yaso. So it's not clear what that means. It's some metaphor about a cistern of not being filled up either with dirt or with water. But somehow, whatever the answer was, and I'm not going to explore it because I can't really handle the economics here. So...
sounds like it's saying like a black hole
fills. Oh, I'm sorry, that's an earlier comment. But if you do have a comment, Aaron, I see you made a comment from much earlier. Much earlier, but I just saw that, I noticed the chat thing now. You can chime in with the comment. Or you can share it with everybody if you don't want to chime in. You can share on the chat with everybody. So everybody, anybody wants to look and see it. So whatever the idea was here, somehow it wasn't enough internally to provide the necessary needs. So therefore, what did they do? Amar lahem, David said to him, lechu upishtri yedechem begadud. So go out and raiding, go on your raiding bands and take from somebody else. I will say this doesn't sit comfortably with me. That doesn't seem like the way ideally one would want to build an economy, that if your own economy isn't enough, start a war with someone else. I suspect that this was maybe not something that would have been so out of tune in the time of Chazal, but to our ears, at least, it rings a little bit funny. So I don't have an answer to the question, but I will acknowledge that it does strike me as a little troubling. But okay, accept it for what it's worth. And it says, L'chu pishti dechem egdod. Miyad, but you can't just go to war in halacha. You have to follow proper procedure. So miyad, firstly, yoatzem b'achi sofel. They would go ask achi sofel, Rashi explains, for practical advice, who they should go to war with, how they should arrange the war, what ambushes they should set up, and so on. Then, nimlochem b'Sanhedrin, they would go take counsel with the Sanhedrin. And finally, v'sho'alim b'urim b'tumim. Then they would go ask whoever was the Kohen Gadol with the Urim b'tumim, with the Choshen, to tell them whether they'll be successful or not. Amar Rabbi Yosef, Maikra, how do we know that this was in fact their practice? So the Gemara quotes a pasuk listing from Divrei Hayamim Aleph, listing David HaMelech's officers. So, and they're going to sort of interpret it in this way. The Acharei Achi Sofel, B'Noyahu Ben Yehoyada, B'Ev Yasar, B'Sar Tzavala Melech Yoav. So that's what the Pasuk listing people. The Pshat and the Pasuk is just its listing people. But the Gemara is going to interpret it as a sequence of events and going to war. Now we know Yoav was the general, so he's the last one in the sequence. So firstly, they went to Achi Sofel. They go to Achisofa first, is Zeyoetz. He's the one who gives counsel, practical advice. His advice was impeccable. Then, after that was Benoyo Ben Yoyada, Zeh Sanhedrin. There's only one minor problem, by the way. Do you have the psukim quoted in your Gemara, the Torah, or our Shalem or no? Somewhere on the page, do they quote the full psukim or not? So, Aaron, can I ask you just to read the pasuk if acharei achi sofel, and what does it say? You have to unmute your mic.
I'm looking for it. Torah or Hashalim, right?
Yeah, Torah or Hashalim. Mine, it's letter Ches.
Mine goes up to Gimel. Hold on, it's probably maybe on another page.
It could be.
Oh wait, I got it.
It starts with the acharei.
Acharei Achisofel, Yehoyada, Ben, Banayahu.
Is that what the Gemara says?
Banayahu, right.
The Gemara says, "Benoyel ben Yehoyada." The Tanakh says, "Yehoyada ben Benoyahu." So the Rishonim were a little bothered by this. The answer that they give is that presumably, who was Yehoyada ben Benoyahu? He was Benoyel ben Yehoyada's father. You know, you get Reuven ben Shimon ben Reuven ben Shimon, and so on. So obviously, they post us on the next Amud suggest it must be that if his father was the head of the Sanhedrin, then at some point he took over. He was the Male Malko Mavosa. That's how they deal with this particular problem. Fine. So that's the oddity in the pasuk. So starting on the top of, so we read Achitofen. Now start on the top of the Dalet Amud Aleph. Benoyo ben Yoyada Ze Sanhedrin, and then Evyasar, the next person in the pasuk. Elu Urim Vitumim. Obviously, Evyasar was the Kohen up until a certain point. When he, remember who Evyasar was. His entire family was wiped out in Nov by Shaul and Doeg. He fled to David, and he brought the Ephod with him. He brought the Urim Vitumim. And that's how David was able to use it. So, Evyasar is the Urim Vitumim. V'cheinu Omer, Uvno Yahu ben Yehoyada al ha-kresi v'al ha-plesi. So, Benoyo ben Yehoyada was al ha-kresi v'al ha-plesi. So there's a machlokas Rashi and Tosus what this means. What does al mean? So Rashi here, until now, the way Rashi reads, al means he was appointed over. And if that's what al means, then, I'm sorry, that's how Tosus reads. If al means appointed over, then kresi and plesi refers to the members of the Sanhedrin. If, however, al means he came before, then the kresi and plesi refers to what came next, which was the Urim Vitumim, because the Gemara is about to explain the terms kresi or plesi. The Gemara says, v'lama nikra shemam kresi or plesi. Kresi shekorsin divrehem, they would give a clear answer. Uplesi, their words were wondrous. So Rashi says, yeah, this was the God's word that came from the Urim Vitumim. It was absolute and definitive. And Tosa says, no. Tosa says that that it refers to the words of the Sanhedrin. Whatever they said was wondrous and it was clear cut. Okay. And then the concluding point of this is the Achakach Tsar Tzava Lemelech Yoav, right? Once they had gone to Achisofa for advice, the Sanhedrin for permission, and Rashi says to Davin for them, to Evyasar, for the Urim Vitumim, to know if it would be successful or not. So then, then afterwards was Sar Tzavah LaMelech Yoav. Then they would go to Yoav, and they would go out to war to somehow fix their economic issues. Okay. Now.
I have a question.
Yes.
Okay. This, they were showing us that David HaMelech had a contraption that told him exactly when midnight is.
Right.
And then it says sort of his routine, and it makes it sound like every morning the Chachamim would come and ask him to go to war.
I presume it doesn't mean that it was every morning. But this is just a way of saying every morning he then had to deal with communal business. And for some reason, they choose this as, you know, I have no idea what prompted this. Because the Gemara, by the way, on Daf Dalam and Aleph, is going to talk about what David was busy with totally different. He was busy answering Nida Shilas. So now the Gemara says the following. How do you know? We're gonna come back to the original question. How did David know and Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know? So the Gemara is not done with that yet. But right now, Amar Rav Yitzchak Barei Derav Ibi on the seventh line. Mikra, what pasuk proves to you that David used to get up using this harp, this kinar, whatever it is? Ura chvodi, ura haneva v'chinar, o'ira shachar. A very famous, I think, song. So he basically, the kinar was somehow waking him up so that he could wake up the morning. Okay, so that was the first approach, to say that Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't expert enough to be precise. And that's why he said kachatzos salaila. David himself didn't know, but he relied upon a natural force. But now the Gemara says the following. Rabbi Zeira Amar, no. Moshe la'olam yada. Moshe Rabbeinu, of course he knew. V'David na'mi havi yada. David also knew when chatzos was. Why does he need a kinar? The answer is, so that he would wake up from his sleep. So the Gemara says, Moshe kasavar, Moshe was afraid, Shema yitu itzdagnine faro. Paro's astrologers, because that's, as I mentioned before in Shir, the way you know when midnight is, before the advent of clocks, is by looking at the stars. Whatever constellation rises in the east and sets in the west, when it's directly overhead, that's when midnight is. So Moshe was afraid that Paro's astrologers would make an error. V'yomru Moshe badayhu. They'll say, Moshe's a liar. Now, I think I mentioned this before. I just find this to be a very funny Gemara. Because Moshe Rabbeinu said Makas Bechoros is going to be at 12 midnight. And then it doesn't happen at 12 midnight. Now, if it happened before, obviously, what are the Itzdagninim are going to say, ha, 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 you see them at midnight, which is ridiculous. But Rashi picked up on that question, but it's still a funny image. If you look at Rashi, he says, Shema yitu Itzdagninim faro. Imani yodea l'chavein hashah, even if I know the exact time, says Moshe Rabbeinu to himself, hein einam yodem l'chavein hashah. They're not going to know it exactly. V'kodem shiagia chatzos, before midnight actually comes, which is when Makas Bechoros happens, Yehu Svurim Shigia, they're going to think midnight came already, Vadayin Lo Ba Hamaka, but the Makas hasn't happened yet. V'yomru Moshe Badai, the same Moshe Rabbeinu is a Badai. Hilkach, Tov Lechos Lashon, Eini Yodea. Better to say approximately, so this way they won't sort of entrap you and catch you. I can still see that there's a cartoon waiting to happen here. The cartoon is the Itzdagninim are cracking at Moshe, laughing, kind of like, for those of you who know Princess Bride, who was the mastermind? So when Vizini is sitting there laughing after he's eaten the, drank the Iocane potion, and he just keels over. Right, so that's what this is. You can imagine, Itzdagninim faro, especially the firstborn amongst them, are laughing, Moshe, how you got it wrong? Boom, and they keel over. So it's still a very funny image. But just to avoid even the momentary appearance that maybe Moshe Rabbeinu's word in God's name wouldn't be true, Moshe said, Kachatzos halayla. And then, and the Gemara now says, the Amar Mar, Lamed Lashon Chalomer Eini Yodeh, Shema Tisbad of Teaches. The most important part of this Gemara. That we should always learn to say, I don't know. Because this, rather than look like a fool, rather than look like you made something up, it's always better to say that you don't know. Lamed Lashon Lomar Eini Yodeh. Fine. And now Ravashi gives a different answer. Ravashi Amar, Bepalga urta de tlesar nagi arbesahaba. Moshe Rabbeinu was talking to Paro and his men at midnight of the 13th, not of the 4th, you know, meaning 24 hours before the plague. Halachically, it was the 14th, but 24 hours before Lel Chatzos Pesach. And he said to them, Mahachi kama Moshe li Yisrael, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu lemachar kachatzos halayla ki ha'idna ani yotzei besoch Mitzrayim. That's kachatzos halayla means like now, like midnight now, tomorrow at this time. So it's not approximately kachatzos, but it means comparative like now. Pshat, by the way, as Rashi points out in Chumash, to solve this entire question is, kachatzos halayla doesn't mean approximately. It's actually, the word chatzos is an infinitive. Kachatzos means as the night divides. That's what kachatzos halayla means. And therefore, it's not a question in the first place. But nonetheless, this is how the Gemara deals with it. And as I said, just to come out with the lesson of that we should be careful in what we say, that might be the most important thing. Yeah.
So it means as the night divides.
That's the pshat, yeah. Yeah. But in other words, lachatzos would be to divide something. You could say bachatzos. Bachatzos and kachatzos mean the same thing. They're two different prepositions. But kachatzos really is a temporal issue, a time issue. So as the night divides, I will go out, you know, in Egypt and so on. So, and that's pshat, but the Gemara starts out by, again, Rav Ashi is also moving away from the Gemara's original interpretation. The first two interpretations of the Gemara are kachatzos approximately. The first approach is Moshe himself didn't know, and neither did David. The second approach is that Moshe knew, but he was afraid the astrologers wouldn't know, so he said approximately. Rav Ashi says kachatzos means like now, tomorrow, and then the pshat is as the night divides. Okay. We'll stop here. And if there are any questions? Okay. And we will, Lenny, I assume we will pick up at regular time next week, God willing. unless we are, if we're zocha to be in person, we'll be in person. I hope that time comes very soon. But in the meantime, we'll continue this way. I would appreciate, by the way, any feedback if people want to give in terms of making this work as well as possible. It's not going to be the same as being in person, but I would appreciate the feedback. If you have my email, send it to me. If not, send it to Lenny. He'll forward it to me. I wish everybody continued good health and a productive week, and hopefully it should be some type of a week of calm. Let me just make sure the... Okay, very good. And I'll see everybody, God willing, next week.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, bye.